Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spech.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Fantastic.
What's up? What's new? What's happening?
You told me I wasn't allowed to talk about it.
Snow?
Well, we do have snow. So I saw that I've been seeing some photos posted in Algonquin and so on that they've got some snow that's sticking around, sitting in the ground.
Frozen ice.
Yeah. Exciting.
Tis the season.
Would you say Fork Lake was frozen over? Was it Fork
Lake? I think somebody said Fork Lake. Mm. They posted a picture and said Fork Lake is frozen over.
I've seen some sheens of ice on puddles around here, but it hasn't been cold enough to freeze anything solid.
No, but on Saturday, I'm still doing my garage stuff, right? Yeah. And on Saturday, he said, okay, it's going to be cloudy, but that'll be good. Okay. So I haul all the boats out on the driveway. Yeah. I go into the garage, start doing my stuff. I look outside, and it's like a torrential downpour.
Oh,
and I walk outside, and then there's thunder.
Oh, yeah.
What the? It's November. It's not supposed to be raining with thunder in November.
Yeah, I saw that.
I was not amused.
My daughter was her school band was a section of the Santa Claus parade this year, and so me and my boy were standing there on the sidewalk watching them go by, and within, I don't know, like 10 seconds of her school group passing, I saw a flash, and a woman standing next to me. She goes, "Was that lightning?" And then for like a sustained 5 seconds, it was, bah, 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 bah. It was like, whoa.
Yeah. Thunder.
You saw the parade pace pick up a bit. And the rain came down so hard. Everybody was soaking wet. So we raced down the sidewalk to get to the end of the parade. And because there's so many people out to see the parade, I didn't bring the car, so we walked home.
Oh.
We wouldn't have been any faster. I think we were faster walking just because there's so much traffic. Yeah. There's no place to park.
But you would have been drier.
Well, yeah. It did stop raining once we got about halfway home walking. And
yep.
So
yeah.
our feet were wet, and it had soaked through my jacket and my hoodie and my T-shirt. And it was like, oh.
Well, the canoes are filled with water. Really? So I'm hanging the a kayak rack on the wall.
Okay, right on.
And yep. Okay, two bolts, boom, boom. The other two bolts, just a bit too big.
Oh.
Like, really? So then, of course, you got to put everything back because you can't just leave your boats out of the driveway.
Exactly.
Because there's nobody home.
Yeah.
So I got to put everything back in the garage.
Go to the hardware store.
Go to the hardware store. Pick up the two bolts I need. Well, while I'm here, pick this up.
Yeah.
Oh, and I got to go over to Canadian Tire. I got to go to Shoppers Drug Mart. Oh, look at that. I've only got 16 kilometers till my truck is empty.
Oh.
I better stop and get gas. Get home. I'm peckish. Make some lunch. Well, I guess that kayak rack's being hung tomorrow.
Yeah,
I didn't get hung tomorrow. Good Lord. Just can't win some days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't even get to see we didn't get to see Santa Claus because it started raining and everybody ran away. But Stella was, she plays saxophone in her band, school band. Getting into the car on the way there, she tipped the mouthpiece off of the car door, and it's just Bakelite. So it snapped off a chunk off the corner, so it wasn't usable. So I dropped her off. She got to hold the sign with two other people. So I have photos and video of a scowl on her face as she's walking with the band but holding up the school sign.
Not playing with the saxophone. Well, she could have walked and pretended to play.
She could have.
Should have gone to the music store there.
Oh, no. The parade was starting within 15 minutes of us arriving at the start line.
Oh, yeah. A last-minute arrival.
No, they told us arrive between 10 and 10:15, and the parade starts shortly after 10:15.
Yeah, it sucks.
And, there's cars everywhere, so much traffic. It is one of the more popular parades. It's like there was tons of people around. It was going to be a nice day, theoretically, but then in comes...
Apparently not.
Here comes a thunder and lightning.
Even my weather app said no rain.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it said wind, but no rain.
I hadn't looked. I didn't know.
So, anyway. Ah, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Other than that, nothing new?
No, not really.
Excellent.
Oh, we do have, thanks to Randy Bourne, a raccoon, he sent us, he does like Oktoberfest stuff.
Yeah, him and Ladysmith.
In Ladysmith, Quebec. Anyway, see, he sent us a couple Oktoberfest Scenes of Canada calendars. Thanks, Randy.
Yeah.
Very much appreciated.
Those will go up on the wall.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I will also add that Michael gave us some Newfoundland beer after he went and visited family in Newfoundland. And so the beer that we talked about last week is what we're drinking this week. It's a Dildo Stout.
Mm-hmm.
Dildo Brewing Company. So, yeah, and that's really good.
It's nice. I love a good stout. Mm-hmm.
So, yeehaw.
Mm-hmm.
So, thank you, Michael, and thank you, Randy.
Yeah, see, we're taken care of now.
I know.
I don't even know why we need to do the podcast anymore. People just sending us stuff. It's awesome.
Well, it doesn't happen often, I will say.
Well.
So, it's very nice, very appreciative when people do give us some presents.
We are also sipping just a little wee nip of Sortilège.
Oh, yes.
Canadian whiskey with maple syrup.
Very good.
Rather sweet.
Yep. Martin Garster always brings this on trips. It's really? It's very good. Yeah. Very, very good.
Yeah, a bit too sweet for my tasting.
It is. It's not something you drink a lot of. It's far too sweet.
Well, I might as well just drink it all down now just to get rid of it.
It's pleasant to try, though. It's a maple syrup flavored whiskey something.
Yeah, it's got all the burn and everything from the whiskey, but then it's got that sweet taste.
Yeah.
So, awesome! That was from my lovely wife, Tracy.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get into a few things here. We talk about people that love canoeing and try to pass on what they've learned over the years and stuff like that. There's a fella, John Mancini. Canoeing is second nature to him. Something he first learned to do as a young boy, but it was a canoeing class trip at John Abbott College in the early 1980s. Now, this is sort of, I think, well, that's not long ago. 1980.
That's a long time ago.
That's a trap. Us older people
that seem to be getting it. That's a lifetime ago.
Right? It changed the course of his life.
Back in the 1900s.
Yeah. Back in the 1900s. And he credits his teacher at the time, Doug Anakin, for inspiring him. I had such a great time, he says, and I asked him, do you ever need help on these trips? He said, yes, of course. Well, I said, call me up. And sure enough, the next semester, the phone rang, and that was 42 years ago. 1980? Like, 42 years? Like,
that's when this article was written. So, 42 years ago. Well, okay, so he didn't say when in the 80s.
Yeah. In the early 80s.
Yes. So, that matches up.
Yeah. So, 1925 minus 42.
2025.
Yeah. Since then, Mancini, who works as a general contractor by day, has accompanied students in the wilderness, showing them the strokes of canoeing and sharing his love of the outdoors for more than 42 years and well over 100 weekend trips. Getting out there, giving back, and sharing with the students what I've learned through this program, through some of the teachers, it's a big thrill for me, he says. And that's what everybody that does this sort of thing says the exact same thing.
Yeah.
We love just getting out there and passing on the
giving
skills,
back.
the tips, the tricks, and teaching, right?
And potentially putting somebody else on a lifetime path of doing something similar in the field. Like, who knows what future generations he has inspired by doing these things. So somebody inspired him, and he's going to go on and continue to inspire others. And to learn to love the backcountry and learn to love stuff like this, and instead of, like, you know, whatever people get into, video games or careers and stuff, for something, this is not his career. This is his volunteer position.
Yep.
And he's done it for 42 years, giving back and teaching people the skills of canoeing. It's amazing.
And you never know where it'll lead.
Exactly.
While he's never been paid, there have been some payoffs as an assistant. It's where he met his fellow assistant who would become his future wife. married 25 years ago and have three sons who have accompanied him on many of the trips. You'd hear some of the college students struggling on the portages, he says, and it's a tough slog. And then I overheard that conversation a couple times. The kids, the students, would look at each other and go, if the 10-year-old can do it, we should be able to do it. It's true. Saskinani, who teaches canoe camping at John Abbott College, said Mancini isn't just instructing students. He's passing along a wealth of knowledge to teachers, too. He's worked harder on this program for a longer period of time than any teacher. There's no teacher that's been at John Abbott teaching these courses as long as he has. Mancini also helped recruit future assistants for the program, which has helped keep it afloat. See, that's another big thing is you may love this thing, but when you stop, is there anybody to take it over?
Exactly.
Right? Which he's sort of making sure there is. He's already inspired the next generation and the one after that. He's going on his third generation of inspiration right now. As a way to say thanks to Mancini, John Abbott College Outdoor Education Department created an award in his honor, which is given to assistants who go above and beyond. Mancini said it came as a surprise to him, but it's meaningful that his plaque is on the same wall as a photo of Doug Anakin, the teacher who started the outdoor education program 50 years ago and has since passed away. To be up there on the wall with the guy who changed my life is very special, he says. Mancini said at 42 years of volunteering, he has no plans of stopping. As long as I can carry a canoe, I'm going to keep doing this. I definitely want to make it to 50. That's so, dedication, man.
It is. It is. So I had to Google because I had not heard of John Abbott College. It's in Montreal on the island, you know, where St. Lawrence River passes around the island in Montreal. It's right there on the south side. It's I've never heard of it, but I should have heard about it.
See?
Very cool.
Very
cool. It's amazing what he, for to be able to spend a lifetime of giving back like that and teaching future generations the skills and the ways of paddling, and it's impressive.
Yeah. Hopefully he gets to 50.
Oh, yes.
That'd be cool.
He will.
That'd be cool. So, there's a fella named Don Pinnock. I came across this article talking about becoming a river.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's this all about? So I read it.
He writes very well.
Yeah. He wrote this article. It's definitely a good one. It's about the Breda River in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
He goes on a trip there with scientists.
Yeah.
There are many ways to know a river, but scientists of the Wilderness Project almost become it. Tracking it on foot and in canoes from source to mouth using sophisticated equipment and pure grit. They paddle, camp beside it, live on a sparse diet of rice and beans, test for any living thing that's been in the water, check water quality, identify and count every bird, take a 360-degree image every minute to build the equivalent of Google Street View of its entire course. They're doing this for the thousands of kilometers of Africa's rivers. Don Pinnock joined them on a survey of the Breda River in the Western Cape. He survived, just to tell the tale.
And he's a really, like, I like his writing style, and it's funny.
It's amusing, it's, yeah.
His patchwork of jokes, and so it's very interesting. So this, it's a long article. It may take the rest of the episode, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
So we're going to present it to you.
One doesn't often get invited to paddle the Breda River with young river scientists who talk casually about the Zambezi, the Congo, and the Nile like old acquaintances. It felt like an opportunity to briefly become a river in a large mythic sense. After spending a large amount of time in the gym, it all came together rather satisfyingly the day before I left for the Breda River, when a close friend said to me, "You're looking different. What have you been up to?" By the time I had loaded dry bags and hopped onto the land cruiser for Brandvlei Dam near Worcester, I could swear my biceps were marginally enlarged. We all have that. Yeah, look at that, huh? At the campsite near the dam, I met the rest of the Barefoot River people. They were uniformly younger than my favorite shirts and unnervingly competent. I was issued an orange tent that reminded me of a cheerful traffic cone and a self-inflating mattress that inflated very willingly and deflated only under sustained diplomacy. Dinner of rice and beans was statistically significant.
Statistically significant.
Mm-hmm. It would be rice and beans again tomorrow and the day after. Occasionally a carrot appeared like a minor revelation. It was expedition cuisine, nutritious, but as sparse as a winter branch. The whole article is like
yeah, it's just all little, this.
Yeah. They were mostly biological scientists. Blah, blah, blah. Can't get that word out. Which is to say they noticed things the rest of us didn't know existed. When two mongooses scooted past on the distant riverbank, we had a spontaneous taxonomy seminar. The tails were wrong for river mongoose. The coloration argued against banded. An owl passed as a ghostly footnote and was debated with the intensity of a doctoral panel. I would discover they were logging the species and count of every bird on the entire river. Each call ticked meticulously into a waterproof iPhone.
So my wife uses an app, and I don't know if they're using the same one, but Cornell University put out the app's called Merlin. Mm-hmm. It's an ornithology app, and we've used it camping so many times. You don't need a connection. You just turn it on, and it recognizes bird calls. And we've been sitting there, and, like, we've gotten recognition of, like, 16, 17 birds all at once in one location one time. And so it's really interesting. It lists all the birds that you've heard, and you can record it. And so it's really neat. It's a really neat app.
I had a cardinal in my backyard, and it said it was a loon.
Oh, no, this app does really good. Like, from what we've seen so far, it's a very accurate. Which app is it?
It was Merlin.
It was Merlin?
It was Merlin.
Yeah.
I'm going to get this because I'm doing the click because this is what I heard. So, because you can keep track of the birds you've heard.
Yes.
And said it was a loon. That's not a loon. Not even close. Why is there a loon in my backyard? breakfast was oats with the nostalgia of powdered milk. I brought powdered milk on a backcountry trip one year and got laughed at.
Just roasted?
Yeah.
I used to bring it too, like, because it's lightweight. It doesn't go bad.
You throw a little powder in with your oatmeal, you get milk.
Yeah,
with your oatmeal.
I've also used it for coffee.
Right?
Like on long, long trips. Yeah.
Well, now I just get the instant stuff that comes with.
Yeah, I don't like the instant stuff, but.
Yeah, weird.
Yeah, I do it. Like, and I also make bannock with powdered milk and
really?
So on. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. We pushed off into the Brita and almost immediately met a weir, a low wall of human hubris where the river changed key. Fast water pouring over the obstruction shouldered us sideways. I exited inelegantly. The canoe tipped with the slow melodrama of furniture. My dry bag containing cameras, pride, and future bobbed downstream, helpfully demonstrating hydrology.
He's got a knack for words.
Retrieved, it proved to be less than dry than I had anticipated, and I spent an hour fussing over sensors and lenses while the river looked on, smug. Camera survived. I resolved to place dry bags inside dry bags and to tether everything to everything else like a paranoid spider. The day widened. Reed bed stitched us into a moving corridor of green. The sky presented the sort of blue that makes you suspect it's been freshly painted. In the lead canoe, Matt had mounted a long, slim 360-degree camera on a tripod, a periscope for a future map. Every minute it clicked, an insect of memory. We were, he explained, making something like a Google Street View of a river, an atlas of the Brita, for anyone who wanted to walk on water with a mouse. Science stop, he would call, and like synchronized beetles, we turned into the bank. Water samples were taken with ceremonious precision, a small drone like an angry wasp rose and began compiling the river's geometry. The bird count continued ceaselessly, but for most of the way it seemed to be owned by Egyptian geese, which creaked on takeoff like barn doors that had resisted for a century, then decided to cooperate loudly. Spurwing geese, by contrast, rose in regal silence. Between the science stops were the rapids, mostly level 2 in the parlance of people who calibrate these things in degrees of threat.
Degrees of threat.
They announce themselves in a whisper that becomes a puff adder like hiss. The Breida suddenly narrows and accelerates, tightening its belt. Rocks appear like old molars waiting to bite down. You steer, you bounce, you scrape. The hulls begin to look like they've been mauled by lions.
He's so descriptive. He paints such a great picture, right?
And the thing is, everything he's talking about, you know, yeah. Right? We came to a weir with a central chute, the white water folding on itself into a swallowtail of rebuke. Matt, who has the calm of a man who trusts physics, went for it with research assistant or analyst Dr. Jessica Minar up front. The canoe nosedived into the froth, shouldered some clandestine rock, and performed a brief airborne inversion. Contents naturally expressed an interest in the Indian Ocean.
It went floating away.
The rest of us portaged uneventfully, which is to say we carried the boats around the monster. Later, Matt would admit that the Breida, far from an amiable back road compared to the Zambezi, was one of the most complicated and difficult rivers he'd run. It's an excellent quality in a leader to say this after rather than before, because I would otherwise definitely not have been on this river sitting in a canoe.
If he told me this before, I wouldn't have gone.
Never tell him, everybody. Boy, it's nice. It's a nice, easy trip.
It's only class 2.
Yeah. The river braided into a green maze, a botany exam with moving parts, channels forked and reforked. Palmeat Islands pinballed us into muscular blue gums. We hauled canoes over trunks, dragged them through tannin-varnished shallows, coaxed them across cobbles that clawed at our hull with a snarl. "You'll wish for the rapids when the wind arrives on the flats," Rayner said, smiling in a way that only prophecy can smile. He was right. But first there were hours of river in its superior mood. Bronze light on water, tiny birds punctuating the banks, a sudden corridor of absolute silence in which only sound was the river's silence. We paddled along Bontenbach National Park with its the casual unanimity. I'm having word issues tonight. Unanimity of mobs. Thousands of geese lifted at our approach, a cloud of creaking doors ascending towards the sky. There is also the science of sadness. Rivers are supposed to gain weight as they go with tributaries feeding in. The Breida does not. Along long reaches, Australian blue gums, invited in a century ago like charming house guests who now own the living room, lace their roots into the channel and drink the water. Agricultural pumps snore steadily along the banks, moving water uphill towards vines and orchards that glitter beguilingly in export catalogs. The river narrows not only by geology, but by thirst.
It's sucking so much water out of the river to feed farming and feed the trees and like the blue gum trees from Australia. It's unfortunate, but it is what it is, right? Yep.
Fertilizer runs back in secret and grows algae and water hyacinth. Our samples linked to drones and located with algorithmic rigor would be able to say it came from that field, that pivot irrigation, that polite green rectangle on Google Earth. The river, if it could speak, might say more complicated thing about all of us.
Mm-hmm.
On the fourth day in a quarter of rapids, I noticed Rayner whistling. It was a jaunty little melody with the occasional celebratory whoop when we plunged through a standing wave and rose baptized. My fear was his fun. what scares somebody else is,
yeah,
right?
I'm pooping my pants, but he's enjoying it.
Yeah. I found this both reassuring and a profound miscalculation on his part about my buoyancy.
you miscalculated how well I can float.
We fetched up at a campsite with lawns so green they seem upholstered. I showered with the posture of a Roman statue melted slightly in transit and put up the friendly orange tent by memory because my back had resigned from the job. Dinner was rice and beans with a carrot coup de théâtre. One learns to be grateful for predictability as for a well-loved proverb. The next day, the river widened as if exhaling. The west wind arrived, and I learned the first and only rule of headwind: no stopping.
So true.
So there was a thing about before the article is he's a kayaker.
Oh, okay.
Right. So you stroke and the canoe moves precisely one canoe forward. You pause to ease your weary arms, and it instantly reverses, pivots sideways, and considers capsizing. The headwind leaned into the downriver current, reared the water into a sequence of improbable standing waves. We surfed down them with briefly renewed energy and paid for it with pain-laced shoulders. Eventually, we fetched up on the sandbar and sat there for a long time with 1,000-meter blank stares, completely exhausted. I know that stare. The next day, we entered an unprecedented rapid maze. At one point, Matt and canoe colleague Jessica appeared to go between a gap in looming black rocks in a route we hoped to follow. Next moment, the canoe reappeared upside down, going back up river, with Matt pushing it from behind. Not that way. I think it was a rock or maybe a hidden tree trunk, he muttered as he scouted for a different exit point. Hard to tell at that speed. The tip trashed the super expensive 360-degree camera, but they had another one. Science has spares. Bird logging persisted. 30 spur wings, someone said calmly as if ordering tiles. 220 Egyptian, the phone recorded. The drone checked the riverside. We camped at Malgus and admired the pont and its noisy engine that chugs cars across the river. Had they forgotten how to build bridges hereabouts? Pitching the orange tent that night, every muscle filled an itemized bill. Rice and beans paid a portion and promised to settle the rest in the morning with oats. The Breida's last transformation is theatrical. The banks run out of definition. The sky begins to colonize the water. The river broadens until river feels like an inappropriate definition. Slightly saline, announced Rainer, licking his dipped finger.
The tides are coming in, so we're starting to mix.
We were in the river's enormous estuary now, nursery of fish and famously bull sharks.
Oh, nice.
A fact that made falling out of the canoe unappealing in a new key.
Wait a sec.
Hold up. Yeah. Along the banks were holiday houses, some huge and showy, some cute cottages. We saw no sign of the occupants, but teams of garden service lawnmowers droned in pastoral in G minor. Finally, white buildings appeared on the horizon. Cape Infanta, the mouth to the sea. We beached the canoes in a long silence, then eruption of whoops and hugs of the nicely dignified kind. Fishermen studied us like a new species of wader. When he understood the distance, days, rapids, wind, rice, he vanished and returned with beer, cider, and crisps, as if manifesting a parable.
Mm-hmm.
We claimed him as our official photographer with cameras that were now, though no fault of their own, soon to be stored. He took our picture, sweat on our faces, river in our hair, the water drying on our clothes, the last testament to more than 300 kilometers of river.
Nice.
The Wilderness Project land cruisers arrived. The canoes were loaded on top, and we headed for the campsite. On the way, someone selected Hotel California by the Eagles, and someone else said, turn up the volume. You can check out, but you can never leave. Back at camp, the kitchen handed in its resignation from beans and rice. There were T-bone steaks, pap, chakalaka, a box of red wine, and cold beer. Glasses were raised to an extraordinary journey, fully accomplished. Everyone was exhausted, however, nursing overworked arms and shoulders. We had indeed become the river, but the little orange tents were calling. What remains after a river is not only memory of effort, but rearrangement of metaphors. Becoming a river had sounded vaguely mystical to me at the start. I had pictured a calm emerging with the natural world, a lowering of pulse, a sense of being carried. There were moments like that, those hushed corridors where palmeet muffled the edges of the day, where the boat and the water forgot to be separate things. But becoming a river, as I understand it now, is far stranger and more human. It is what happens when the habits and rhythms of water begin to colonize your mind and body. A river is a logic that keeps moving. It accommodates obstacles by exploring them. It keeps a ledger of small adjustments. It knows that the shortest line between points is not always the best one. It's as we are, alive. Before the trip, I had thought of my age as a dam wall, fixed, high up and on the wrong side of a canoe. On the Breda, I learned to be more braided, to take the daring left channel when the right sounded more doable but shallow. I regard a rock with less fear, to surf a headwind with resignation and humility. A river doesn't overcome, it continues. There's also the practical theology of simple food, repetitive shelter, and collective labor. Beans and rice, mocked by gourmets, become a sacrament after 8 or 10 hours of paddling. The cheerful orange tent becomes a cathedral of repose for painful shoulders. Science, too, became less of a series of tasks than a way of paying attention that felt like courtesy. Logging birds and sampling water didn't interrupt the river. It completed a conversation the river had been having with us all along. On our final night, I crawled into the little tent with that delicious sense of having become thoroughly finite. Everything hurt, but specifically and not in the worrying way of age. I lay on the self-inflating mattress, now subdued after appropriate negotiations, and listened to the residual conversations of wind and water. I thought about the weirs where the river changed tone, about the blue gums leaning in with the yearning of immigrants, about pumps humming like locusts, about the 360-degree camera's eye stitching together a ribbon the world would later unspool on the screen. I thought about the fisherman's correctly timed beer, about the eagle's sly prophecy, about the baffled, kind look on the face of the man who had seen the sea every day and was suddenly asked to take a picture of its reason. What I took home was not endurance, though Drake deserves a footnote in any book about my shoulders. Drake was his trainer.
Oh, okay.
Or courage. I had the junior edition, but a new grammar. Paddling is just a way of saying yes or no with your body. Looking closely is a way of saying thank you to the planet. And fear, properly managed, is a direction finder. If the hiss ahead is too high, try the channel that speaks in the lower register. It would be condescending to say I kept up with the young scientists. I did not. They inhabited rapids as if returning to something they owned in installments. I visited, clutched the furniture, and left small dents. But, and this matters, I belonged. Becoming a river is not about disguising your age as a vigor. It is about letting your motion find an honest speed. The river took my fear and fussing and returned it to rhythm. At the gym a week later, trainer Drake asked if I'd do it again. I said yes, in the bright voice of someone who has not read the weather report. He nodded like a man who had just moved a small pin in the weight stack. Just two more, he said, and for the moment I heard the river in his voice. Its economy, its mercy, its refusal to explain. I took the handle, leaned back, and let the cable have its say.
Very cool.
That was just...
It was a nice read.
It really was.
He really painted the picture for you.
Mm-hmm. So if you want more information about this wilderness project, they're doing it on these rivers, thewildernessproject.org. You can go there and find out more information about what they're doing and the science behind it all and that sort of stuff. There's actually a lot of stuff... that they're doing about the data and all that sort of stuff that they're collecting.
It would be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to get science-y,
yeah,
check it out. That was a rather long one, eh?
It was. I thought it was going to take longer than that.
I thought you were going to have a snooze.
What are you talking about? I was riveted
by my sultry reading.
Well, I was confused by some of your pronunciations, but
so was I. You start reading a bit ahead, and then you start getting too far ahead of where we're actually reading.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I don't know about you, but I'm like three words ahead of what I'm actually reading. Anyway.
But it's easy to find the natural flow. So I'm I'm going to look this guy up, and I'd like to read some of his other
works.
I'll
send you. There's another site that has, you'll probably like the science-y bit. Mm-hmm. I'll find the site and I'll send it to you.
Yeah.
Do you remember the Ely Marathon we talked about last year? There's the one
Boundary Waters,
of it.
Right?
Yeah, there's the one portion where people will do the marathon with a canoe on your head.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever thought to yourself, I'd like to try running a marathon?
Yes.
Maybe.
We talked about it last year, I think.
Have you ever thought you'd like to run one while carrying a canoe over your head? Probably not. Paul Scholl of Fergus Falls, an avid outdoorsman and accomplished runner, runs 50-mile and 100-mile races. So when the friend told him about the Ely Marathon Canoe Portaging Division, he decided to give it a try. I looked into it, and I thought, I'll add it to my race schedule this year. The fact that you got a race schedule,
that's too much. Yeah.
And it was a good race, Scholl says. It was good. He won and set a world record.
What?
He now holds the unofficial record as the first man to break the four-hour mark.
Wow.
Nobody's ever ran that far with a canoe that fast.
How heavy was the canoe, does he say?
Yeah, like 26 pounds.
Okay. That's pretty light.
Yeah. The former Concordia athlete put his name in the record book at the race late September. I'll share this with somebody, and then they'll say, so when did you get in the water and paddle? I'm like, there was no paddling.
It was all portage.
He ran 26.2 miles with a 26-pound canoe overhead. Took him about a month of training to prepare.
What? That's it?
Right. One person pulled over and asked me if I needed help. He learned small tricks such as balancing the canoe and wrapping the shoulder pads in towels. Well, you can't run as fast. You're definitely slowed down by the canoe. And then you also have to factor in, like, wind. You know, the canoe is like a big sail on top of you, he says. All that training paid off in his first portaging race. I think there's value in pushing ourselves outside of our comfort zone. Whether it's within your workplace or within your family, we grow a lot. The previous record was held by a man from Iowa. Scholl said that just didn't seem right. It should be a Minnesotan. A little extra motivation. He's still deciding if he'll race again next year.
Wow.
I like that. So, when did you paddle? We didn't.
So, the part where a person pulled over says, hey, buddy, you need some help?
When he's training, yeah.
So it reminded me during... I saw a clip. I think it was it was something on the Terry Fox run. And one of the anecdotes he talked about when he was interviewed was when he was running through Quebec, the French just couldn't understand, what's this guy doing?
Right.
And so the guy stopped and says, can I give you a lift? No, I'm running. No, get in the car. I'll give you a lift. No, I'm running. So this same guy here is like, he's jogging down the road with a canoe on his head. The guy, somebody drives by, he's like, oh, this guy must be in trouble. He needs help.
It's like Forrest Gump. I'm running. Yeah. Wow. Yep.
That's impressive.
I will let him keep that record.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I will not.
Under the goodness of my heart, yeah, will not attempt to steal that record from him.
Yeah.
26.2 miles. He's earned it. 26. Yep.
Wouldn't want to show him up.
I would not want to show him up. So, out of the goodness of my heart, I will not.
Well, we talked about. Now, a 26-pound canoe is a huge advantage. And when we discussed, I think about 2 years ago, these two guys who were doing their own climbing marathon thing, but they had custom-made skin-on-frame canoes.
Oh, up Everest.
And they went up Everest to base camp.
Yep.
And I think their canoes were, I don't know, I can't remember how heavy they were, but they were
light.
Super light. Yeah. Super light.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Look at Mikey's skin on frame.
Yeah, yeah, super light. So, yeah, there's a huge advantage with going ultralight.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to impress me? You do that with a heavier
do canoe. Do it with a
your proper. Oh, I got a boat for you.
Canvas over cedar.
Right? There you go. Let's just keep it a little real, shall we?
Here's my 85-pound Scott fiberglass canoe.
Do you remember we talked about the U.S.-based National Outdoor Leadership School, NOLS? And everybody was in uproar because it was put in an application for like 77 different campsites.
They overdid it and they said, no, we're not going to use them all, but we're going to be doing this over multiple years. We want to, we get short and we need some sites.
This is when the whole U.S.-Canada relations things was just starting to go downhill. They now say it has dramatically scaled back its plans for sea kayaking operations in British Columbia. It scaled it back.
Mm-hmm.
NOLS confirmed it is abandoning its proposed Inside Passage route and removing many of the campsites from its Crown Land application.
Well, it just looked fishy,
right?
Yeah.
The clarification comes as the BC government continues to wait for the organization's revised application after months of public backlash and concerns from several First Nations. NOLS spokesperson Francis Vandebuyken said the organization is no longer pursuing an Inside Passage sea kayak trip, a move that significantly reduces the number of campsites it is seeking approval for. But if it's not going to the Inside Passage, why does it need campsites?
Yeah.
Unless, of course, they have to keep so many every year.
Yeah, and then the way they had originally described it, of their prescribed or their proposed campsite use, there people were like, well, it sounds like you're going to be building something at each of these locations. What are you saying here? No, we're not going to build something. It's more of a, we may need to, we did some geospatial, we assessed the area and we said, we may need to stop here. Mm-hmm. This looks, according to Google Maps, looks like a good spot to stop. Did topographical maps and yada, yada, yada. It's like, you guys put a lot of work into this, but you're not really being descriptive of how you're going to use the sites.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a lot of people.
It sounded fishy.
It did. And it's not just us.
No.
A lot of people are going, whoa, what is this? What do you mean?
Mm-hmm. Vandebuyken says NOLS is now starting with a smaller, more focused application as it works to engage First Nations whose territories its courses would cross. We were now focusing on areas where we have historically offered sea kayaking courses, except for the west coast of Vancouver Island, which has been removed from our application.
Which is the open ocean side, which would be unsafe to do.
Yeah. So they're going to go, but it sounds like they said they're not going to do the Inside Passage part.
Well, see, the thing is, they're not doing. Well, they're now saying sort of not doing either. So what are you doing? Mm-hmm. So the Inside Passage is between the island and the Olympic Mountains. So. And I don't know. It just seems confusing. So are you or are you doing the West Coast?
Mm-hmm. They say we do not have any plans to offer any BC sea kayaking trips in 2026, the company says. Company originally sought permission for 77 campsites along the coast, including dozens on Vancouver Island. Public and Indigenous opposition centered around ecological sensitivity and strained Canada-U.S. relations. NOLS announced in September it would amend the size of its application. While NOLS says it is still finalizing the details, it now expects over a 50% reduction in the number of campsites and said that further reductions are likely. Okie dokie. Sites on the West Coast and Vancouver East South have already been removed, according to the school. Last week, BC's Ministry of Water, Land, and Resource Stewardship said it had yet to receive the revised application, but expected changes to include campsite removals on the west coast and north coast, with possible additions on the central coast and parts of Vancouver Island. Once the updated application is submitted, the province will post it online and reopen public commenting. NOLS says the government has indicated the review process could take several months. There is still no timeline for when a final decision will be made.
So it looks like they gave up on 2026 expeditions.
Next fall.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it sounds like. It sounds like they're giving up on that. And
moving it into 2027, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, all I know is that I'm sitting here looking at different trips for next summer. Alrighty. Well, this fall hasn't been finished yet.
I need to find more remote locations, because over the last couple of years, I've found that Temagami and Killarney are getting way overused, and we found that in Temagami, a lot of the locations we had hoped to land on, Preacher's Point and so on, there's just people would like go in with power boats and drop 10 jerry cans of gas there, and they're going to be there all summer. It's like, whoa. What?
So I stole their 10 jerry cans of gas and headed back home in my boat.
So I want to find a more remote location next year with the family and see if we can do something different. Maybe go up into the northern part of Temagami and the Solace Wildlands and so on.
The west side.
Yes. Yeah.
I got to get you up into why am I just drawing a blank on the name?
Boundary Waters?
No, we need to get
Quetico?
There. Quetico we need to get to.
It's eventually. Such a long drive.
Yeah. Well, it's a 24-hour drive just to get there, right?
Yeah, yeah. So you're going to have to...
And you got at least 2 days of holiday that you're going to be spending on your butt in the car.
Yeah. So...
It sucks, but...
And if I drive up there with family, it's going to be stopping at Superior halfway there, on the way there and the way back.
Not if you go... No, that's, you can't do that. Never mind. I'm thinking of something else. That's the drawback when you're going that far.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Quebec is the answer. Northern Quebec.
I've gone through Kevin Callan's video of... Oh, it's left me. It's he did this trip in Quebec.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that... Travailles, I can't remember the name of the park. But anyways, it looked really interesting, and it didn't appear to be that busy, and it just looks like a really awesome location.
There's a lot of places that don't get a lot of, but even still, like we've been heading just around like 2 hours north of here.
Mm-hmm.
And especially this time of the year, like when kids go back to school, it's still warm enough.
Yes.
There's not as many people.
But I want to bring my kids. So
take them out of school for a week.
No, I've tried.
Or a day or a couple of days.
I've been told I'm not allowed to do that.
Says who?
Says my wife.
What does she know? She don't know from fun.
No, you're not pulling the kids from school. It's critical they don't miss any school. It's like, okay.
All right.
I think at the right opportunity itself.
Start coughing. Tell mom you've got colds. Go sit in the car.
I still do want to get them up to Moosey Moose Factory.
Yeah, when are you going to do that trip?
I'm trying to put something together, and I'd like to do it twice. I'd like to do it with a group of people from work, and I'd like to do it with the family.
Yeah. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even if you do it just family, take the train to Moose River Crossing. And
so that's too short. We want to go in by Otter Rapids and do a run of over about 5 days and catch the train back. So, because the train can drop you right just below Otter Rapids.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a few places that it'll drop you.
Yeah.
Or you can just go right from the 17, right?
No. So if you go to the west route, it's a lot of whitewater, and I can't take my kids on that. And if you go from the 17 on the east route, there's a lot of portaging around hydroelectric projects and so on that just makes it – you need too much time. It's time-wise.
One of those families, are you?
What? So yeah, Otter Rapids. Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard trying to get everybody's schedules.
A balance. And, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why for years I just left everybody home, went my own merry way. And now that the kids are gone, Trace and I just hopefully find a dog or a cat sitter.
Yeah.
Can we
take
the dog with us and go on our own merry way?
Yeah. We were actually just discussing this on the weekend. We need to train the cats better to be free feeders instead of timed feeders. So it's just like
you need one of those
schedule like a couple years back with the cats that we had who have passed away now, we would just put a couple giant bowls of food and a couple big bowls of water and have somebody come in every 2 days to clean the three or four litter boxes because we put extra litter boxes out for them when we're gone. Because right now, like when we do trips, it's like her mother or sister or nieces come in.
Right.
So there's somebody in the house twice a day. And it's like, that's asking too much for people.
We have that automatic food dispenser.
Yeah.
And at 5:45 in the morning.
Yeah.
And 5:15 at night, it dispenses dry food to them.
Yes.
And we have the water fountain thing that keeps the water circulating.
Well, you have the same one. Yeah.
So, yeah. So, somebody's just got to come in and top that up every so often and
we don't,
scoop the litter boxes.
We don't like the idea of that Pavlov's dog thing where the food thing just dropped food and cats are screeching through the house, hitting cabinets and racing to the food thing. So,
you know what? Put that into effect. Grab one of those machines. And on weekends when you want to sleep in cats aren't bugging you for food, you're going to go, best damn thing I ever bought.
Yeah.
Because at 5:45 in the morning, I hear that on a Saturday morning, and I hear the cats run downstairs because they're upstairs, right? Yeah. So you hear them down the stairs, and then you don't hear a peep from them. And you get a few more hours of sleep. You don't have to get up and go down and feed them. Because if you don't, they're in your room meowing. If your door's closed, they're scratching at it.
Yeah.
They're bothering the dog, who then goes.
Our cat body slams the door. It's like, stop body slamming the door.
Yeah. Look into it, dude. Look into it. But yeah, you should get your family up on the Moose River. That'd be...
Well, yeah, we do want to enjoy it. I think it'd be great.
Yeah.
And if you do the Abitibi, Otter Rapids Abitibi into the Moose River route, it's less prone to dry patches on low water. Like in September when water gets really low, the westerly route, you can ground out a lot if you don't go at the right time of year, if it's a dry year.
Yeah.
In the last couple of years, it's been super dry in Ontario in about that time. So you either have to go earlier season when the bugs are so bad, or you have to push it later in the season when the storms come back and the water raises. But then you've gone through, you've seen the storms, you can get in September. So, or was it October you went?
October.
It was October, mid-October. So the winds come up and So it's a balance.
It's glorious. We had that one that was like what they say. It was a couple kilometers less than hurricane strength.
Oh yeah.
Because
we ruined a tarp, right?
Ruined a tarp. We tied the tarp down, put a like a 60-pound pack on it to tie it, to hold it down, and the pack ended up all the way across the campsite. The tarp was shredded.
Oh wow!
Just from the wind.
Yeah.
I had a Eureka Spitfire solo tent.
Yeah.
I placed it behind a massive tree, so the wind hit the tree and then split around it.
Yeah.
So I was pretty good underneath. Scott Robinson and I were 6 feet away. Our tents were 6 feet away, and we were yelling to get each other to hear. The wind was that loud.
Wow.
Like you're yelling just to hear each other.
Lucky a tree didn't fall on you.
Very lucky. But, I mean, there's nowhere we could go.
Yeah, exactly. You know? You're stuck.
We had the tent. I'm surprised that the canoes didn't end up in the woods somewhere. But they were tied down and everything too, right? So, yeah. It's cool to experience weather.
Yes. Oh, it is. Absolutely.
I mean, it can be scary at times and stuff like that, but it's cool to experience harsh weather.
Yeah.
As long as you don't die.
Yes. If you don't die, it makes you feel alive.
Right? I've been through thunder, lightning storms where the lightning's hit trees next to my tent, been in that big wind where you're just waiting for it to rip that tent right out of, you know, the top of your tent right off sort of deal. Snowstorms that you can't even see where you're paddling. Ice storms where you stand up and you got this big chest plate of ice falling off the front of you. You know, it is really, really cool to be
to experience
that kind of weather. You know, when we were out west, you would see the rainstorms coming across the prairies.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
And you'd be watching the road and stuff like that, or the lake, and you see, like, across the lake, on the road, you would see darkness coming up the road.
Yeah.
And then on the lake, you just see this disturbance coming across the surface of the water.
Okay.
And as it came closer and closer, it was the rain front. And then all of a sudden, it's like, right over you.
Huh.
And you're just getting
soaked.
But it was like just to experience that kind of weather on a canoe trip is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You got to do it. And that's one of the things, you know, we talk about now. It's a bit of a frustration at times is the fair weather paddlers.
Yeah, who cancel? Campers. They book it. They cancel at the last minute because the weather. Oh, it's going to rain.
Yeah.
So it makes it easier for you because there's less people around. Because I don't mind going out in the rain.
Nope.
Like I sometimes tend not to check the weather. I just whatever happens happens.
Well, see, we were up on Bice Lake, a group of us, and the thing was, you know, we're just sitting under a tarp all day because of the rain. You know, we came up here to do some paddling and do some fishing. Mark Rubino and I got in the canoe in the rain and went out. Okay. It wasn't thunder and lightning. It was just rain.
Mm-hmm.
And we went out and had like an hour or so of fishing.
Yeah.
We had our rain jackets and stuff on us. We come back, we take it off, we hang it up, we get in our seat underneath the tarp. We're still dry, but we just went out and had some. And there's people that don't want to do that on a very warm summer's day when you get the
rain. On a warm summer day, I would absolutely do it.
Nice little drizzly rain.
A fall trip in November?
No.
Maybe not.
Yeah. But you're sitting there and, you're just. The water, you're just enjoying the being rained on.
Yeah.
Especially you don't have a lot of portages or anything, right?
Yes.
I mean, you're going to get wet putting everything up on the truck and the canoes and all that. So you might as well just enjoy the enjoy it. You know, my mommy always said, you're not going to melt.
Yeah. Yeah. Not made sugar. You're not going to melt.
Yeah. Well, she could have been lying. I could have had a couple other brothers and sisters for all I know, but they got caught in the rain and melted.
Where
my mom
them.
Could have been lying to me. Yeah, we don't know that. Anyway, you got anything else?
I don't.
You don't? All righty. Well, I am making plans for next year. This last couple of years have kind of been my plans sort of got busted last year. And this year was going to do all these river trips, and that's one thing led to another. Didn't happen. Then we ended up in Japan. But I don't think we have anything big going next year.
We should do that October solo trip where everybody goes solo.
Get back in the
we
solo
should
trips
start
again.
Start doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now I do my solo trip as it was to begin with.
Yeah.
Solo.
No, but and you know how you get together a bunch of people, like six people, everybody in their own canoe?
Well, it's because everybody always wanted to come with me.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, well, if you're coming with me on my
solo trip,
then everybody comes on Sean's birthday solo trip in their own canoe.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get together a large group of guys and have fun doing that.
60 of us.
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe max
55.
4 to 6.
46.
426. 426. Not 46.
What do you got against those other 14 people, Derek? Sir, you can't come. Derek, cut you out. You. Pack it up. You're not coming. Derek says no.
Only 46. Max.
Yeah, but no, I've got a couple plans for next year that, like I say, right now there's nothing big going.
Yeah.
So, I've already started my list of different rivers I'm going to do and stuff like that, so we'll see what happens. Woohoo!
Mm-hmm.
Woohoo! Yeah. Best laid plans, as they say. Best laid plans.
In theory, 2026 should be a lighter year for work for me, because our major project is done, so I might get out and do some solo trips and...
See?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
When's the last time you did a solo canoe trip?
Oof.
You probably forget what it's like.
Yeah, it's been a while that I was just out there on my own. I did a solo trip south of Algonquin in 2021-ish. And before that, it was like, say, 2016.
Wow.
I used to do a lot. Like, it's when I first moved here to Ontario, I was like 4 or 5 solo trips a year. I didn't know a lot of people, so I just went out.
That's how I started.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you start reaching out and touching base with people, and they go, hey, we're going there. Why don't you join us?
I want to start doing just like a me and Becca trip, and then a me and Stella trip, and then just like, you know.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
Kids loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then you get the one-on-one, so Tracy ends up with one of the kids, and I end up with one of the kids, and then switch
you do
off
your own
sort
things,
of deal.
Exactly.
Yeah. We even do that when we're camping, too.
Mm-hmm.
Take one of them out for a day trip, and then take the other one out for a day trip.
We tried that last summer, and so what we did is we ended up doing, the end result was a 4 of us doing a hiking trip through the Western Uplands in Algonquin, but the original plan was that me and Beckett would do like Rain Lake and so on and do the loops around, and we would meet at night at campsites.
Right.
Me and Becca would paddle, Stella and Siobhan would hike. But we just couldn't make the logistics work because we couldn't get the campsites that we wanted. It was just, it's too busy of an area.
Yeah.
So we just ended up doing just a purely hiking trip, which was fun. It was good.
Yeah.
It was interesting to get the kids out, and it was a bit of a long slog. Each day was, you know, quite a few hours of hiking, which, you know, Beckett is he's younger and he's not as avid with the walking portion of anything. Are we there yet? Are we near that? Stop it.
They need it. So if I ever become a trillionaire, I'm going to get a massive tract of land.
Yeah.
And there's going to be hiking trails, but they're going to be paved.
Okay.
So you can do a scooter thingy.
Oh, yeah.
See? That'll be right up his alley. Tell him I'm thinking of him.
He would love that.
Well, we'll see what next year brings. But they're still paddling this year, so...
Oh, yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Water's not totally frozen yet. Yet. Still, well, I was paddling at New Year's there.
Yeah. Well, you did every month of 2024,
2025.
24, yeah. Yeah.
Here you go. See? Things to do.
Yep.
And I have noticed, in case you're wondering, on Facebook Marketplace and stuff.
Oh, okay.
There's occasionally people getting rid of dry suits, which would fit you.
Are they?
Mm-hmm.
I do need one. Mm-hmm. There's been a couple times where it's like, yeah, I got to get out. And it's like too early or too late in the season. And I just not, I will paddle those times of year, but I'm not going far. I'm staying close to shore. Yeah. It's not going to be a trip. It's going to be a day trip. And just because I'm not going to risk falling into any, even though on the warmest days, Lake Ontario is so cold. Mm-hmm. I remember doing kayak rolling practice on the lake shore on Lake Ontario, and it's like, well, this isn't going to last long. Try a roll, and it's like, well, no, I can't. As soon as my arms start cramping from the cold, and you feel all the little pins and needles in your feet because it's water so cold. It's like, this is July. What's going on?
So this is how I
and
die.
That's when I was younger.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how I would handle even worse now.
No, dry suits, one of the best things I did for prolonging, you know. And again, it's a big cost, but there's a lot of them that are coming down in price too. So keep your peepers open.
There are, but my fear is that, you know, you cheap out too much and you're not getting the quality.
Oh, you're not wanting one of those ones you're getting off of Alibaba.
Alibaba, yeah, it's only $220.
$220, like, you get what you pay for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Your safety in life is not something you want to skimp out on.
Exactly.
Anywho, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.